Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So my next interview is with the cast and crew of the new documentary film Ghost Fleet, directed and written by Shannon Service and Jeffrey Walden. We had quite a crew to speak with today in this interview at the Toronto International Film Festival. We had producer John with us. We had Patima as well, who is kind of, I guess you could say, the star of the film. She is the activist. She's one of the people, one of the stories that Jeffrey and Shannon follow. And this is a film that you're probably, well, first of all, you're going to enjoy the film from a doc perspective. It's going to peel back some layers for you that you probably haven't heard of before. Haven't seen before. This is about the illegal fishing industry in a part of the world that probably a lot of us haven't had the fortune to travel to. Thailand, for instance, is the fourth largest seafood market in the world. I had no idea. And, you know, your shrimp ring probably came from there that you're going to be enjoying later tonight at a cocktail party that you're attending. This is about the environment. This is about conservation. It's about the illegal slave trade. It's about forced labor. It's about fair wages and child labor law. It's about supply chain transparency and legislation. We talk about consumption and waste, and we capture quite a few different sort of stories, sentiments around not only the film but also the passion and the commitment that goes into being an advocate, as Patima is, for these men, for these people who are being exploited in incredibly difficult conditions and in severe ways. So stay tuned, listen in. I trust you're going to enjoy the interview. You need to see the film. It's called Ghost Fleet. And don't forget, davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my speaking. A whole lot more interviews coming your way. Is that good English? I'm not even sure. Is that, you know, a whole lot more interviews? There's a lot to choose from on facetofacelive.ca. If you want to get behind it, you can support what I'm doing through patreon.com. And if you can't do that financially, and I totally get that, please leave a review on iTunes. I would really appreciate it, and I know the rest of the world might too. So stay tuned. Coming right up, the cast and the crew from the new documentary film, Ghost Fleet.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by, well, I almost wasn't able to count how many guests we have here today. 5 guests from all over the world here at the Toronto International Film Festival. We're at the Intercontinental Hotel. You might even hear a little ambient noise in the background, some selfies being taken in the distance. I'd just like to say welcome to the crew and cast of Ghost Fleet. I just left the press and industry screening, and I'd like to say right out of the gate, congratulations, welcome to Toronto, and thank you for your time today. Maybe we could start with some introductions.
Sure. I'm John Bauermaster. I'm the producer of the film. Oh.
I'm Shannon Service. I produced and directed the film.
I'm Jeff Waldron, co-director and a DP on the film as well.
Hello, I'm Pratima Tang Pasayakun from Reverai Promotion Network Foundation, LPN.
I think the translator should be introduced as well. So,
I'm Brendan Carroll, and I'm providing translation.
So, question, and I think we're just going to go, and maybe as we get a little further in, I'll have some specific questions for you. But where do you begin with this story? I mean, this is a story that's been ongoing. I heard in the film that there was work being done with child labor and sweatshops, and there was a shift as filmmakers. How do you get pulled into this story? Is it something you've always cared about? A lot of questions going on here, but I just thought maybe providing a tiny bit of context without giving too much away might not be a bad idea. And the film, by the way, is Ghost Fleet. Yeah, why don't you go ahead? Yeah, filmmaker.
Absolutely. This subject was brought to me in the form of actually Shannon's NPR story. We kind of came together as a team 6 years ago now through a co-producer, Greg Quidar, introduced me to Shannon, who had been living in Southeast Asia with her reporting partner, Becky Palmstrom, and they had been researching this topic, and Greg introduced us, and I saw a lot of potential for getting this story out in a very cinematic, visual way as a means to try to reach a bigger, broader audience. There's, you know, a lot of hard news to swallow out there in the world, and by being able to find and put a face on it and make a film that is very much a movie as well as a vehicle for talking about the issue, we thought we could reach people in a more emotional way.
And what is the issue? I mean, on the surface, boom, you know what the issue is, but it's illegal fishing, it's slave labor, it's human rights. I mean, there's a lot going on, right? Yeah. Any great film, any great doc, there's layers.
There's a lot of layers.
Was it the illegal fishing trade, or was it slavery that drew you all into this conversation, or was it a little more specific?
For me, it was the horrors of the labor abuse.
Right.
But as Shannon had already sort of looked into the layers, I was starting to find there was a nexus of a lot of issues, including
right.
environmental and overfishing, oceans issues, obviously the labor, the supply chain, all these sort of things started to become a part of the greater story, and sort of they all sort of explain each other in sort of a connected chain of events that's been perpetuating in the region for a lot longer than even I'd imagined.
It's really interesting. I don't know how you can watch this film and not be taken by the environmental edge to it, and yet you don't make it a focus. There's one particular scene where the net is bursting, and I believe it's Dima who says, look, they've basically emptied the ocean, or they've taken everything, which is such a great line, because
it just
captures this sense of, I don't know, excess, I suppose.
And we think that that's one thing that's going to separate this documentary from a lot of other documentaries out there that have been made either about human trafficking or ocean conservation, is the fact that this combines the two. You know, the slavery has existed for a long time, but it's only been heightened because we have so badly overfished the sea, the one ocean on the planet. Thus, these boats have to go further and further to find fish, cost them more. One easy line item for them to cross out is labor. There are laws on the books, but not a lot of enforcement. But I think you're going to see both silos, the people who care about ocean conservation and the people who care about human trafficking, coming to this film and making that linkage.
It's, I believe it was the Prime Minister of Thailand who said it's a $9 billion industry. There's going to be a fair bit of exploitation, it seems to me, when you're talking about such a huge... yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just, there's talk about layers. Where do you begin? I guess you begin with the personal, and that's kind of what you've done here. You've got five or six faces, five or six families that you've focused on. Is that how we're going to get towards some kind of change? Is it through the personal narrative? Because, you know, you can talk. I interviewed Ritipan recently, And he talked about, you know, 2 million dead in Cambodia during the 70s. But it's the one face that made the difference for him. It's the one story that's meaningful. Not that the others aren't, but that the one brings it home, I guess. Does that make sense? How do you begin? How did you get pulled into this, I guess, maybe is the question, Fatima.
เราเริ่มทำงานตอนปี2004ปัญหาของคนที่เป็นทาสมีทั้งชายเลเบอร์แล้วก็มีทั้งทาสในเรือประมงตั้งแต่ปี2004
My work started in 2004 and I was focusing on two issues child labor and issue working conditions and slaveryin the commercial fishing industry.
เราใช้เวลา10ปีกับการช่วยเหลือเด็กในโรงงานแกะกุ้ง
And for around 10 years, I focused on helping children that were working in shrimp peeling factories.
สถานการณ์เริ่มดีขึ้นเราก็คิดว่าเรื่องในน้ำคนที่อยู่ในเรือประมงยังไม่ได้รับการช่วยเหลือ
As that situation began to improve, I started to focus on issues in commercial fishing and the stories of commercial fishermen.
เรือประมงไปหาปลาไกลมากที่อินโดเราตัดสินใจหลังจากที่ได้รับข้อมูล128คนเราคิดว่าเราต้องไปดูที่ปลายทางมันก็เป็นที่มาของการทำหนังเรื่องนี้128คนที่กลับมาจากอินโดนีเซียแล้วเรายังช่วยพวกเขาไม่ได้เราคิดว่าต้องไปดูที่ปลายทาง
The commercial fishing industry started to go further and further away from Thailand. They started to go into Indonesia for fishing. And after I heard stories that came back with the men, and there were about 125 men that came in and told their stories,And after I heard those stories, I decided I had to go to Indonesia and see for myself.
หลังจากนั้นก็มีการเปลี่ยนแปลงคนได้รับการช่วยเหลือจากโอเปอเรชั่นของเราเราทำงานร่วมกับสื่อใหญ่อย่าง AP เราทำงานร่วมกับทีมชานอนซึ่งก่อนนั้นหน้านั้นยังไม่ได้ทำหนังแล้วก็พอหลังจากนั้นเนี่ยเราก็คิดว่า
After that, as the story continued to develop, we started working with partners. We worked with AP, and after that, we worked with Shannon and her team.
Fatima, you ask a question, I think, near the beginning of the film, and you say to one of the men, one of the laborers, don't you want to go home? Is that really what this is all about for you? Is that the injustice?
สิบปีเราคิดว่ามีคนถูกทิ้งแล้วเราก็ไปดูแล้วเราก็ได้ช่วยคำที่มีค่าที่สุดสำหรับพวกเขาคือกลับบ้านของลูกเรือประมงนี่คือเป้าหมายแรก
Yeah, that was my first goal. For 10 years, I heard stories of men being thrown away. And when I went for my... After I went for myself...and saw for myself, that was the first goal, the first mission, was to help these men get home.
มันเยอะมากคน
There are so many stories.
Absolutely.
ความยากของมันคือทำยังไงพวกเขาถึงจะได้กลับ
The challenge is what to do to help each individual story be able to come home.
Why is it that you got involved and somebody else didn't? This is such a big problem, and you made the decision to do something about it.
คนมีวิธีคิดหลายอย่างบางคนรู้ทุกคนรู้เรื่องเนี้ยพอรู้เยอะมาก
There are many ways to look at the situation. This is a situation that most people know something about, and many people know a lot about.
แต่ไม่มีคนทำ
But no one does anything.
And why is that? What's your take on it? As you know, the directors, the producer, the people that you've met. You stepped into quite a few different places as well, and quite a few different cultures. What is it? Why isn't anyone doing it though? Because it's the fish on my plate. As you kind of end the film with that montage sequence, you know, the complicity of it all. I don't want to go there. It's a question I don't need to ask.
It's a great question. I'd love to hear Fatima's answer too, but I know that there are some groups that are stepping in and doing stuff. I was really surprised when I started looking into this in 2011 with my reporting partner to find that it wasn't the governments. It wasn't the Thai government. It wasn't the Cambodian government. It wasn't the Burmese government or even the Indonesian at that time who were taking responsibility for their citizens and saying, hey, oh my gosh, you're stranded. Let me get you home. It was really hard to even get them a plane ticket. A lot of these men, they would be abducted. Sometimes they'd walk into a bar or a brothel. They'd be drugged. They'd wake up on board a boat. They'd jump ship in a foreign land. And all of a sudden, they're an illegal immigrant. So if they were caught by authorities, they couldn't go to the authorities because either the authorities were being paid by other people to trade them again, or more often they would just be arrested on immigration charges. So there was this really kind of crazy blind spot happening.
Sure,
and even
sure.
though the governments knew about it, they weren't stepping in any kind of an active way. Fatima has worked with the International Organization on Migration. There's been a couple of other UN agencies, but it was mainly really small, under-resourced NGOs.
Right.
Like
Tenaganita. As is often the case,
exactly.
Right?
But this is a huge global issue, connects
right.
to all the fish on the planet with enormous global industries, and the people trying to deal with all of the fallout on the other side were the smallest, scrappiest, you know, most brave, but like least resourced organizations possible.
Right.
And
right.
Fatima was the chief.
I found it so fascinating too. I'm not sure if it was Nong or Pong. You arrived to take him home. And he said, "Wow, it's all so sudden. You know, I wasn't expecting you. Sort of. The tension was palpable. I've got a family here now. Why would I go home? And yet, I want to go home. And that struggle, that it's horrible. I've never even considered that. Really, I've got two families. You know, in two different. It's kind of mind-boggling." The struggle, and I'm just wondering if any of you would want to talk a little bit more about that and how difficult that must be to work through. Yeah, probably, yeah, I would imagine. And it's 4,436 people that you have rescued from the fishing industry, is that right? Is that the stat at the end of the film? So far, it's continuing to build.
นงเขาอยู่อินโดแบบผิดกฎหมาย
So Nong, the story of Nong, he was in Indonesia illegally.
เขาต้องการกลับเมืองไทยเพื่อกลับไปรับลูกของเขาคือ register ลูกให้ถูกกฎหมายเขาต้องเป็นพ่อตามกฎหมาย
So he has to come back to Thailand to prepare his paperwork and also to prepare the paperwork of his child that he has.With his Indonesian wife.
ในหนังเขาไม่แน่ใจว่าคือในตอนนั้นนะเขาไม่แน่ใจว่าเขาไปแล้วเขาจะได้กลับไหมนั่นคือความเศร้าใจความไม่แน่ใจ
In the movie, what was making it so hard was his uncertainty whether he would actually able to get back to Indonesia or not.
แล้วก็ในหนังอาจจะไม่ได้บอกว่าตอนนี้เขากลับไปที่บ้านเขาแล้วก็ไปอยู่กับครอบครัวเขาเหมือนเดิมได้ค่าแรงแล้วก็ไปจดทะเบียนสมรสที่อินโดได้ค่าแรง 200,000
So in the movie we didn't include the end of his personal story. We didn't include that after he was able to come back to Thailand, he received compensation of about 200,000 baht and was able to prepare paperwork that allowed him to return to Indonesia and be with his family.
And will he bring his family back to Thailand or will he stay in Indonesia?
เขาเลือกที่จะอยู่ที่อินโด
He personally chose to stay in Indonesia with his family.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that makes a whole lot of sense to me.
เราอยากกลับไปตอบคำถามแรกก่อนว่าทำไมไม่มีคนทำ
And then, if I can, I'd like to go back and answer the question of why hasn't anyone done anything?
Mm.
จริงๆมันไม่มีคนเริ่มต้นเราแค่เป็นคนเริ่ม
The simple answer is that no one started. I'm the person that has the responsibility to start.
แล้วหลังจากนั้นก็มีเพื่อนหลายคนที่อยากช่วยเริ่มรู้ความจริงเริ่มให้ความสนใจ
After that I have more and more friends that are interested that want to learn more about the issue and that will be able to help
ที่สําคัญมันคือชีวิตคนจริงๆเนาะที่เราได้ช่วยเขาแล้วก็หนังเรื่องนี้ก็กําลังจะบอกว่าชีวิตคนธรรมดาก็ช่วยคนได
้ What's important to me is the individual lives of these menAnd what's important to me about this movie is that it shows the life of a normal woman. One normal woman can help many, many people.
Right. That's a great... That should have been, I think, the log line for the film, right? One normal woman can help many, many people. Yeah, I love it. What about the complicity factor? You know, I mean, we're all complicit. It's not just a Western problem. It's a global problem. We all like to eat fish.We all continue to consume way too much, way beyond our means. I mean, there's all kinds of things we could talk about, but
it's about
there's never
consumption,
a simple solution.
It's about consumption,
right?
And about waste.
Consumption and waste.
You see
yeah,
so much
sure,
of that fish that's
sure.
caught is just thrown back into the sea and never has a purpose. But, you know, there also has to be a distinction made between illegal fishing and forced labor at sea, which are two very different but related subjects. People understand a little better... you know, that what illegal fishing is. You know, our partner in this film is Vulcan Productions, which is owned by Paul Allen, co-founder of Microsoft, and he has a great interest in illegal fishing, has put a lot of money into trying to explain and stop illegal fishing around the world, including they built and launched a $40 million satellite to track illegal fishing boats.
Wow.
Which is, you know, all of a sudden you've got technology in there that exists, but it has nothing to do with tracking... forced labor or slavery on boats.
Right, right.
Two
very, yeah, define illegal fishing,
two very different
right?
things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There are, you know, technological solutions. Every airplane that goes up has a little black box on it, and it tells you who's on the plane, who's the captain, where the plane is based, and who owns it, et cetera. I mean, so the technology, because you could have that kind of thing on boats, but, you know, we're far away from that, I think, in terms of putting a black box on every fishing boat.
Yeah, please. Yeah, go ahead, Shannon.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things I think about the film, and part of it is what John was just talking about, is it's about the movie, of course. First and foremost, it's about creating a film that people want to see, a film that's about this heroic woman and who has helped rescue thousands of men, her right-hand guy who was himself enslaved for 11 years, going back into the area where he was enslaved, finding other men, and kind of finding his redemption and healing through actually rescuing others. So, you know, the film itself is extremely powerful, but of course we've been working with Vulcan, highly technological, highly skilled. You know, they work at the UN level, the national level, the satellites in the sky. But really, it's a very interesting combination of this very high tech approach to illegal fishing, which is very important and effective, and what kind of possibilities exist when we have a very low tech. Network, which Patam is sitting in the middle of, which are thousands of men who come back to her and say, well, I was on a boat and a man jumped ship here, or, you know, we actually used to transfer fish there, or there was an island where captains used to just offload their unruly men, and there's probably men there. And so it's this very interesting, sort of very old-fashioned, the network of knowledge of the men themselves, combining, hopefully, potentially in a strong way with the satellites.
It's like an organic sort of advocacy or activism,
like
or resistance or something.
Yeah, yeah, how to marry those and how to bring in the consumers, you know, in a way that makes sense into this whole picture.
Well, so supply chain transparency legislation is actually something that's actually fairly significant, and it's going on in Canada right now. There's a conversation. The UK is far ahead of us here in Canada, but there's a conversation going on. And largely around child labor and so on, but there's so many implications for this, and this is one that we don't typically think about, and it's a big world, and that's why these kinds of stories are so important, and why it's so important to say that one person, one woman can make such a significant difference. When you guys go into, I think it's Havana, Indonesia, pretty creepy, frankly. that whole sequence, the ships. I mean, it just, it must have been quite something to be there. Did you guys at all feel threatened, unsafe? At you must have at different points, I would think, but maybe you had a handle on it as a storyteller, but as a filmmaker as well.
จริงๆก็ต้องใช้ความกล้าเนาะเอาชนะความกลัวเพราะทุกครั้งที่ไป13ครั้งไม่เคยคิดว่าครั้งไหนจะรอดถ้าเรารอดครั้งนี้ครั้งหน้าเราไปต่อรอดคือไม่ตาย
อะ every time I go and I've gone 13 or 14 times I have to be brave every time I go I have to understand that the possibility for death is there
เขาคิด1ชีวิตกับ 2,000 คุ้ม
but I think one life for 2,000 people
ก็แต่ว่าเน็ตเวิร์ดแล้วก็ภาษาของการที่เราจะกำลังจะช่วยคนกับคนในชุมชนเขาเข้าใจภาษาที่เราอาจจะไม่ต้องใช้ภาษาอินโดแต่เป็นภาษาของมนุษย์ที่เราจะช่วยกัน
But what I remember and a technique that I try to use is it's not important that I speak Indonesian with Indonesian people. What's important is that I speak the language of helping others.
ก็ทำให้เมื่อมีความเข้าใจมากขึ้นเราก็ช่วยคนได้มากขึ้นใช่คนในชุมชนเริ่มเข้าใจเริ่มโปรเทคเรา
And the effect of that is slowly we build a group or a community of people that not only understand the issue more and better, but also provide protection for myself and my group.
I love, yeah, go ahead, jump
in. Just in terms of sort of shooting in Southeast Asia, the dangers and... so much of our bravery came from what she's willing to do for this and sort of the weight of the issue. We had, the first time we went out there, we spoke to many Cambodians and Burmese that had been through just the worst atrocities of just forced labor. So the, you know, being able to go out on the ocean and sort of come face to face with even some of the boats and things like that for some of our B-roll was... scary, but considering what, you know, the risk versus the leverage to be able to show people this stuff that's just not been photographed,
right.
It was totally worth it. And honestly, her bravery was ours. You
yeah,
know?
Almost it would be, I was going to say embarrassing, but that's not strong enough for you to not come alongside at that point, right? For you to say, hey, I'm a little frightened here.
Absolutely. Right? And it's out of fear that, so, you know, so little of it has been captured and distributed.
Well, I wonder about that too. It sounds like such an oversimplification to just reduce it to greed. And I kind of came out of the theater wondering if it's got to be more than just about $9 billion. There's, I don't know, or maybe not. I saw the tilt of the head there.
I don't know why not. That's how our larger economy runs. I mean, yeah. I hate to say it, but
let's blame the free market.
Well, I think that there's a there are very, very long supply chains, very obfuscated supply chains
sure.
between the people who are actually producing our food, impacted by how it's produced, the ecosystems that are obliterated in the process. There's a very, very long chain between those of us who are picking something out at the market and what's on the other side. I don't know if that's deliberate or not deliberate, but it's certainly inherent in the system that we're all a part of at the moment. And I think that that gives us responsibility. You know, there are shorter chains that we can pursue if we're able to afford it. Fish, just like any other produce, is you can, in most places, have local fish. It is seasonal. There's some seasons where a particular fish is more abundant than another season. So I think that, you know, for too long, fish has gotten a pass.
Interesting.
You know, it just shows up on our plates. It shows up in our pet food. Nobody asks where it comes from, how it was caught, where it was caught, when it was caught. And, you know...
Yeah, the product of Thailand was not missed, certainly on me, at the end with the knife, as the knife and the package sealed back. I mean, wonderful. montage, I guess,
that's the end.
Jeff.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, that's a detail we wanted to include because that's about all they have to say about fish is where it originated from.
And if I hear what you're saying correctly, Shannon, it's be a little more intentional about the decisions we make and about the choices we make. And I think that is how we can, as consumers. I hate even referring to myself as a consumer, in truth. You know, it just, it's so sort of, you know, it's just meaningless kind of in a way, you know what I mean? But there is power in the decisions and the choices we make.
Absolutely. And the simple act of getting curious, asking questions, asking, you know, the grocery stores, you know, what they're doing to ensure that, you know, people aren't being exploited and where they're sourcing their seafood, your restaurants, all this stuff. The more people that start asking questions, the more that conversation becomes, you know, sort of gets to that next level, which would then help get it to that next level. But yeah, our hope is that people, you know, recognize that scene from the grocery store as one that they're doing weekly, and they can sort of backtrack the supply chain in their minds to the possibility that slaves are catching their fish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the other implications as well, the environmental. Did this avocado come from Costa Rica, or did it come from a greenhouse not so far away?
Absolutely.
There's an impact to that decision.
And the even just the difference between land grown.
Sure.
The ability for regulators to take a look and be like, oh, that actually is organic. We can track it.
Right.
The fact that some of these boats disappear into a vast ocean, never to be seen again, for all intents and purposes, makes it so hard to track. And that's why it's going to be a much more
I think one of my key takeaways is to figure out how to get access to this satellite. There sounds like there could be some pretty interesting things going on there. There might be some power in that, I think. I want to end with we got to wrap it up here, unfortunately. But I want to end with, I think it was 15 minutes, you said you were, it was the scene around the sort of, if I can call it this, out of respect, or respectfully call it a makeshift graveyard in the jungle. And you said that it sounded to me like your desire going forward was to let's help those who are still breathing. And I just thought, again, I mean, that should be on the t-shirt, you know, for Ghost Fleet, it seems to me. And as human beings and as activists, I just wondered if there's a challenge you could offer the audience to encourage them to take the next step.
Good. เราไม่ควรให้ชีวิตคนมีค่าน้อยกว่าปลาอันนี้คือสิ่ง
Most importantly, I want people to remember and to think that the value of a human life should never be less than the value of fish.
เราก็ควรที่จะทำให้ supply chain ปลอดจากการใช้ทาส
Secondly, we all need to work together to create transparency in the supply chain.
มันไม่ควรจะมีคนตายเพิ่มจากอุตสาหกรรมนี้แม้แต่คนเดียว
And there's no need for any other lives to be lost in this industry.
So thank you all, and we've been talking with John, Shannon, Jeff, and Patima about their new film Ghost Fleet at the Toronto International Film Festival. Get out and see it. Where's it going to be after this? More festivals, VOD, theatrical release? Do we know? Yes, talk to the man with the money.
Festivals for a while, but we're anticipating that we'll have some sort of distribution arrangement soon.
So
it could arrive sooner than anyone expects at that moment, but. All up in the air at the moment.
Excellent. Well, I wish you well with it, and thank you for your time today. And again, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.